establish trust with people who are following you, those people, those individuals will go much further and exceed what they think they can do because they trust the leader, what he's saying, and they want to follow him.
We all believe that Tom Coughlin was a great leader, but he was different. But he was genuine. I mean, genuine can apply to a lot of different personalities. You know, Tom was genuine. He was a genuine pain in the ass sometimes. But he was genuine.
Well, you trusted him.
Because he was upfront and genuine and honest. That's all you want, I mean, from a player's standpoint. That's the thing that motivates players, in my opinion.
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli.
Now that's a cool cat.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
And we welcome you into Jaguars This Week. J.P. Shadrick filling in for Brian Sexton, who is emceeing the One Spark opening ceremonies tonight downtown Jacksonville. We're with the birthday boy, Tony Boselli. Happy birthday, Tony.
Thank you, J.P.
And Jeff Loggeman's here as well. JP, what's happening? Good evening. And we're joined by a very special guest right off the top, the general manager of the Jaguars, David Caldwell. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
So you've had a chance to really kind of lay your eyes firsthand on the roster that you are shaping. What do you think after 2 days?
It's been great. It's been really exciting to see our coaching staff out there coaching and the high level of intensity that they're showing in their coaching and their methods and obviously the energy. You guys have been out there.
Yeah, I got tired.
Yeah.
Yesterday watching him, I got tired.
Well, Shad was here today, and he said, you know, in terms of the coaching, he's like, man, the energy's great. I said, yeah, by the end of this practice, some of our coaches will have better workouts than some of our players.
I was going to say, the way they coach, I mean, you're watching those guys, and I don't know all the coaches by name, but I saw Gus, after almost every play, is sprinting down the field and coaching some position along the way. And then George Arno, the offensive line coach, he's all over the place. I mean, he has a little bit of energy himself.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's one of the things I pointed out to Shad is we were in a team session. I said, Shad, you're going to see something. You're going to learn something about coaching today. And I said, right after this play, watch the wave going up to the line of scrimmage. And it was about eight coaches that just attacked the line of scrimmage. Todd Wash, defensive line coach, George Arno, and that they're going in there. They're making their corrections right there on the field, and they're thriving for perfection, and they're doing a really good job.
And there's an intensity. There is an intensity that a lot of times, especially when you're starting, I think, from scratch and rebuilding the foundation to build on top of that, it takes the coaching staff to really start when you have a young team to start bringing that energy and kind of set the tempo so the players can follow.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, the leadership is critical, and that's the main reason why we hired Coach Bradley and what we said from the get-go. It wasn't about offense. It wasn't about defense. Everyone we interviewed, we knew we were going to be good coaches, but he's an excellent X's and O's coach, but he's a tremendous leader, which you guys have seen.
And a little different. I mean, you got the music playing. It kind of reminds me of a little Pete Carroll style there with the music playing throughout practice, which, you know, hey, look, you know, when you play game day, you've got music playing on game day.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. There's a lot of different elements out there. The biggest thing, too, is colleges now. I go to colleges every day in the fall, and I have to say 95% of the colleges play practice during music. And some of the ones you wouldn't even expect, you know, some of the old school colleges, you're like, oh, that coach is really setting his ways, and there's music playing.
When does the evaluation start? Is there film each night? Is it at the end of camp? Is it a week from now? When does that start for you?
It's ongoing. It's you know, through practice, and then after practice, we're going to watch the film. And the coaches are, I believe, are breaking down their film right now. And then we'll have a meeting tonight at 9 o'clock after the coaches are done breaking down their film.
What do you out there today watching? You sat with Shad and watched the practice, and obviously walking him through what is going on and what you guys are trying to accomplish. But from a GM standpoint, and we'll talk about the draft in a little bit, but as you evaluate the team as it is now with the current guys from last year's roster, the free agents you signed, and then the group of veteran free agents you brought in just for this minicamp, what are you looking for? I mean, obviously on the tape you sit there and you break down individual positions and technique and everything else, but as a GM when you're at practice, what are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for guys that compete, you know, on a play in play out basis, but also looking for guys that have a specific skill set that for their position that we look for. You know, those receivers that get in and out of breaks really quick, those DBs that can, you know, break on balls or run deep with receivers and stay on top with the receivers running deep. you know, offensive linemen that are coming off the ball with proper footwork and proper hand use, defensive linemen that can, you know, be disruptive without, you know, as far as we can go.
It's hard right now.
Yeah, it's hard, but you can tell guys getting off the ball on the rate they're getting off the ball. And then, you know, we have 58 guys under contract right now, so we have another 18 guys here that are, you know, vying for a spot to come in and compete during training camp. So hopefully we can take one or two of these guys and, you know, bring them into training camp, and hopefully they make our team. So you know, this will be worth their wild and our wild.
You mentioned one or two. That what's impressing you, one or two, or is it more than that?
It could be as many as all of them. Highly unlikely it would be all of them. Yeah. But
you did a really dang good job, or it was really bad. One or the other, yeah. All 18 make it.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll meet with our coaches tonight and get a good feel for how they feel about the players learning. Obviously, that's a big critical part of it, you know, their classroom demeanor and how they're learning and competing in the classroom, too. Bring it on the field. So these guys are being evaluated. You know, Tony, you've played in the league for a long time, and you know it's a constant evaluation process for the players, and that's what we're looking for.
And a lot of times,
as part of that evaluation process, I mean, obviously one of the keys to that is the relationship between you and the head coach, Gus Bradley. How is that evolving? You know, now that you've got something to evaluate on tape and in front of you as far as practices go.
It's been great. And, you know, we met last night a little bit, talked about the roster, and then today we'll meet again with the whole staff. But we're starting to see things very similar because we spent a lot of time on the college guys and the free agents that we've had here and some of the guys we've signed. And I'm really getting a good feel for what he's looking for in his personnel groupings and on defense and offense. So, getting a really good feel. We've had some really good film sessions on the college guys, and then last night with our guys, and then tomorrow with our guys.
You know, you talked about the 18 guys you brought in just for camp. Evaluation, meeting with Gus, and obviously he's in the coaching staff's going to have a lot of input in that and as you make those decisions. Realistically, I mean, when you went into this weekend, of those 18 guys, what would be success in your mind of a certain number making it to the next stage?
Oh, shoot, if we had one.
You'd be happy.
Yeah, it'd be worth it.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, with the general manager of the Jaguars,
and,
David Caldwell.
Let me go back to Tony's question real quick. The other thing, too, with that is, you know, these guys will also be on our short list. So as the season goes through, as during training camp. So even if one doesn't get signed right away during training camp, during the season, we're like, hey, remember we had this guy during.
And part of that's because they're going to learn part of the system, so they'll be ahead of the game if you have to bring him back.
Absolutely,
in.
Yeah.
All right, so the question that everybody wants to ask, who are you going to draft?
Holy cow. We have no idea.
There's a draft
You're
coming
a
up,
and you know what? I'm going to call you a liar right now.
Is the work done, though? Do you have some work left to go for?
We have some work to do. You know, most of our work now is more on the back end of the draft. And obviously what we do with our first pick in round one depends on what we do in round two. So even, you know, it could differ depending on what player we take at number two, you know, our process in 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
You, at least the media reports have said it's, and you mentioned it's down to two guys,
mm-hmm.
meaning that no matter who Kansas City picks,
there'll be one or two.
There's going to be one or guy, at least one of the guys left for us to decide. And I know you're not going to tell us who it is or even give us a hint because that's part of it. But how much fun is it being now the guy, the GM, to play a little bit of that game? I mean, because listen, we all know it. It's part of the game. It's part of the process. You know, trying to, you know, whether send smoke signals over here, we're going to go there or whatever. But it's got to be a little bit of fun.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I haven't played too much of the game, and I've tried not to. It's just basically I've just been honest with people. We haven't really known. We've been doing the work, and then finally kind of hit us, and we're like, this is the direction we have to go, or this is the direction we have to go if this player falls to us. And once we came that, now we're working on our second-round pick, third-round pick, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh to make sure we can get the best seven players for our team and our needs here. So to be honest with you, I haven't done a whole lot of it. I've talked to a lot of media people, and I haven't sent out any smoke signals. And we've just done our work and gone through the process. And the smoke signals are what people deem them are. You know what I mean? So
sure.
They interpret it as a smoke signal, but we're just going about doing our work and trying to do what's best for the Jags.
What's your impressions of the draft overall, of the talent pool from, you know, first round through second round?
I think it's a good draft. I do. I think there's going to be a lot of players that come in and have good success early on. Second round, there's a lot of players you like, and third round, there's a lot of players you like. So it's a really good 2 through 4 round, and you know, you're always going to have those 5, 6, and 7 round picks that are going to be successful.
As you mentioned, it's down to two guys that you guys evaluated that could be the pick at number two. Is trading out still an option?
Absolutely.
If you got the right value.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. It has to be the right value. And it's a situation that, you know, we'll all options are still on the table. We like two players there, but we also like three, four,
more
five.
Draft picks.
Yeah, there's other guys we like there. It's just right now for our team, one of those two positions is what we're going
to
do.
Explain to people listening without getting in too much detail, how does that value work? We've heard a lot about the value board, this pick, but isn't it a little bit, that value board can change. Is if you're in a position last year with the Atlanta Falcons, the value board experts said, oh, that's ridiculous. Or 2 years ago, that's a terrible trade for Julio Jones. Well, looking back now, you give whatever you had to get Julio Jones.
The value depends on the player that's there.
Yeah.
And it's supply demand. If a team really covets a player and that's the only one that's there, then the value goes up. If there's options, three or four options after that player at that position, then you might not have the same amount of value. Conversely, we might be more willing to trade back too if there was other options there.
So we're 8 days out approximately from the draft. Are the phones starting to ring? Phone calls being made? Is that when it starts right about now?
Yeah, we've had some feelers, some preliminary stuff, nothing major. And I wouldn't anticipate anything major until probably the beginning of next week.
Mm-hmm.
Last question for you. There's a fine pie for Tony's birthday. You want a slice of it? I'm just going to give it away to you.
Listen, we don't want to break the secret, but Dave's on some silly diet.
No, it's not a diet.
He's trying to get in shape. He's trying to look better for his wife.
I don't know. He looked hard at it.
I've been married 18 years. I tell Angie, it is what it is. This is what you get. I eat pecan pie.
The problem is I've only seen my wife twice probably in the last 3 months. So next time she sees me, I want her to remember.
You want to look good.
Yeah. I don't want to be like, holy cow, what happened to you?
Well, Dave, thanks for spending some time with us tonight. And I know it's an exciting time for you. It's your first draft and the new era of the Jaguars, but it's an exciting time for everybody.
It's been great. You guys have been great. Everybody in this city, this organization, it has been awesome. And, Coach Bradley and I, we feel like how lucky we've been to be able to come to this city and this town with this organization. And just the people are tremendous, and we're looking forward to building something special here.
Dave, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
David Caldwell is the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, joining us on Jaguars This Week. Joe, get us out of here.
You got it, JP. Hey, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Check them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Jaguars This Week rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Are you getting your Jaguars rewards? Well, sign up at rewards.jaguars.com and get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online using the Jaguars Rewards website. That is Jaguars at rewards.jaguars.com, JP Shadrick.
Oh, that a baby.
You have a little problem there?
Oh, man. It's the smell of that pecan pie.
I know I'm new here.
Pecan.
I know.
Yeah. Can we get it right?
Pecan.
Room is split.
The Metro PCS call-in line, 355-6351. That's 355-NFL1. We will take some calls after the news break at the bottom of the hour here. J.P. Shadrick filling in for Brian Sexton with Tony Buscelli, Jeff Loggeman. Our thanks to David Caldwell, the general manager who just
joined
us.
Good interview.
Yeah, it was great. What do you guys think? Your reaction to the draft coming up?
I think, listen, we're all biased, and everyone listening to us knows that, we're Jaguars through and through. With that, I think you also know we're going to tell you the truth, be critical when we need to be critical. I've been impressed with David Caldwell since day one. He's a young GM. He's 39 years old.
The second youngest in the league.
First gig as the guy. And I can't tell you how well I think he's handled it. All of it, Jeff.
From the very beginning,
It is more than just picking players. It's manning his organization. It's getting the right head coach. It's the media responsibilities. It's communication. It's all of it put together. So far, he gets an A. Now, the real test comes a week from tomorrow night. That's when the grading really starts, and we'll see how it works out.
Well, you can't give him a grade, a week from tomorrow night.
That's when the process really gets focused.
I know what you meant.
I guess the true grading comes, 3-4 years from now, right?
No. You can start grading the middle of next year. Okay. You get a sense whether or not
you play. You'd hope to have an idea about him. But, the thing that really has impressed me is how well that David Caldwell – and Gus Bradley are working together. Because, you've got to have that workable relationship between the talent acquirer and the talent coach. And if you don't have that relationship, because I don't think we had much of a relationship here last year.
It wasn't the case last year.
Then it just doesn't work. And so that's good to see. The organization has undergone a lot of change, and so from what I saw out there in the last 2 days, I was very impressed because I just like the energy, and a lot of people are wanting to talk about the music. You know, that's the thing that's going to make the headlines. You know, whatever, big deal. It was impressed with the energy level. And at the beginning of that practice, they almost went through it, kind of reminding me of high school days. So we used to have something called Every Days, in which everybody participated, and you had all these different drills, and you went from station to station to station, and they're doing that as a team.
Right.
As for conditioning, camaraderie, even the quarterbacks are participating. Obviously, they're not putting the quarterbacks through the bags where they're getting hit at some point. But very impressed, very impressed.
Draft coming up, he said he was open to trades, you know, even for that.
And listen, I think deep down inside, they would love to trade because this is a team that has 58 guys in the roster, 18 guys in for minicamp. I don't think anyone would argue there's probably you could throw a dart at the board and hit a need pretty easily. And you need more picks. We have 7 picks right now. Acquiring more picks, I think there's definitely an opportunity with the top of the second. After spending the night, a night after the first, where people are going to be jockeying to get somebody at that position, I think they'd love to trade the number 2 pick. I know they like 2 guys. Mm-hmm. I think they'll be happy if they get one of those 2 guys, which obviously they will be number 2. But I think if the right offer comes, I think they trade down immediately.
Well, and I think him saying, you know, we like 2 guys, I think that's not a earth-shattering statement to me.
No.
But I think what was interesting is, Tony, when you asked him about do you apply or acknowledge the value chart and how do you take that into account? And he said, you know, the value is really upon the player, which tells me that, hey, look, if they have the ability to trade down and feel like that they can get a player of similar grade and maybe not take quite as much, maybe they do that, as opposed to in years past where, you know, the player would determine what the value of the pick is. So to me, that's kind of interesting, you know.
And Jeff, I'm with you. In a draft that's deep like this, if it's even anything interesting where I can get maybe an extra second round pick in this draft, and I might have to go down a little bit further than you typically would or whatever.
You might do it.
I might do it because it's a deep draft. It's deep at offensive tackle. I know the 2 are Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel. It's deep at the defensive line. I know reports are they're like Deion Jordan, Ziggy Ansah from BYU. But there's depth at both those positions, and I think you can get a very good player even if you have to trade down a little bit.
All right, guys, we've got to get to a break. We'll come back after this news timeout on WOKV and talk about camp this week. We'll hear from Jed Fish, the offensive coordinator, see what he has to say about the quarterback competition. We might hear some Gus Bradley sound as well. 355-6351, 355-NFL1 is the Metro PCS call-in line for Jaguars this week. Joe?
All right, JP. Jaguars fans, you can be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up, sync your social media platforms at jaguars.com/social league. Earn points for every time you post something Jaguars, and then use those points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets for the Jags game in London. Lots going on in the world today, and News Talk WOKV's got you covered. They're next, right here on Jaguars Radio. This portion of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Fanatics.com.
Oh, hey, thanks, Joe. It's my getting back on the saddle edition of Jaguars This Week. J.P. Shadrick filling in for Brian Sexton, who is the MC of the One Spark opening ceremonies tonight in downtown Jacksonville. That'll be going on all week. Glad you're with us on WOKV. 355-6351 is the number. That's 355-NFL1. Put a 1-800 in front of it if you're outside of the Jacksonville area. Let's go to the lines now, guys. For the first time tonight, we visit with Kevin in Mandarin. He wants to talk about the upcoming draft. Kevin, good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Good, thank you.
Good. I just, for a little pre-draft fun, just wanted to bounce this off you guys, get your thoughts. I personally, as a fan who follows it closely, I think that the 2 guys that Caldwell hasn't nailed down to is Deion Jordan, the defensive end from Oregon, and Sharif Floyd, the defensive tackle from Florida. I think the wild card could possibly be the BYU defensive end, Ziggy Ansah. Wanted to just get your take on those players.
Kevin, let me interrupt you real quick.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, what makes you narrow it down to those 2 players?
because I have a hard time seeing Caldwell take a left tackle.
And why is that? What's wrong with left tackles?
Kevin, I think you have just happened.
No offense, Tony. No offense. No,
Kevin,
no. Hey,
good luck. I know. He's pretty mad.
I'm all about left tackles. In fact, the year that we drafted Eugene Monroe, I was elated. I guess the reason I'm thinking along those lines is, number one, Caldwell has said they're going to be more of a needs-based drafter. Now, I understand that doesn't mean they're going to draft strictly for need. They're going to draft within groupings. The second reason I say that is because if you draft a left tackle that high, don't you kind of have to start him at left tackle? And then what do you do with Eugene Monroe, and he's in a contract year?
Well, let me interrupt you right there.
John Ogden.
Jonathan Ogden was drafted number two, going to be a future Hall of Famer, and did not play left tackle his first year. I think it worked out okay for the Ravens.
It did. You're right. Okay. Well, that was going to be the second part of my question to you guys was, I did want to get your take on Deion Jordan and Shreve Floyd, both Jeff and Tony, if you guys don't mind. And then I was going to ask you, what if one of those guys Caldwell has on his short list is a left tackle? How do you see that playing out in terms of where do they play this year? What happens with Eugene next year, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, yeah, I've been on record in saying that, if that's the guy that you think is the highest-rated player, then you draft a left tackle. You know, and the reason I say that is Eugene Monroe's got 1 year left on his deal. You have a need at right tackle unless Cameron Bradfield gets better. You know, so what could be wrong with that?
But
to me, nothing.
Do you put the draft pick on the right side?
Absolutely.
Or why?
Or you move Eugene to the right side?
No.
Why not?
I mean, you could, but I mean, he'd have to earn that right. But I mean, to me, you got to.
If the left tackle's better than Eugene, then you put him in the left.
If he's better, but the chances of a guy walking in the door and being better than a pro who's been in the game for a few years, I think, is very small. Very few guys have been able to do that.
And I believe.
Yeah, but if you're picking number two, you hope that he's one of few guys.
Well, wait a minute. Here's a question for you. Why didn't John Ogden play left tackle? Tony Jones was over there at left tackle, and Tony Jones was a veteran guy. And
Tony Jones is also a Pro Bowl player.
Hey, I'm not saying that Eugene Monroe is a Pro Bowl player, but.
And I'm not saying. Listen, I'm not saying Luke Jokel or Eric Fisher would beat out Eugene Monroe. Eugene Monroe very well could be better. So I don't know who you put at left and who you put at right. But my guess is, based on what Gus Bradley has told us and the way he coaches, it'd be a competition.
And it's my understanding that Eugene wants to be a left tackle.
Sure he does. You can make more money.
Right. I mean, exactly.
Who doesn't want to be left tackle?
If he's moved over, I mean, this kind of spells the end for Eugene, right?
Well, he's not going to be. He won't be very happy.
It'd be much easier to have a rookie come in and say, "Hey, look, we're going to play at right tackle."
Absolutely, you're right about that.
And then, as far as dealing with making everybody happy,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I don't think that's the mindset of Gus Bradley making people happy.
No, he said he wants things to be uncomfortable.
And I think it would be very uncomfortable for Eugene if they draft a left tackle.
But just drafting a left tackle, no matter where he plays, doesn't it make it uncomfortable?
Oh, it's going to be very uncomfortable.
Right? I mean,
it'll be an uncomfortable meeting.
What it is. Yeah. You know, so you'd accomplish that just from the draft pick alone.
And I don't think they're going to pick a left tackle. And I'm just, because
I have no idea.
I have no idea. No. I don't either. I only say that because if you looked at, because I do believe Dave is a need-based guy. And that's what he's basically said. If you looked at this team, your left tackle position is the least of your needs probably. I mean, Eugene Monroe is a good player. Is he playing at the level we all think he can play? No. I think he can get better. I think he can be a Pro Bowl player. He hasn't got to that point yet. So I don't see there being a need at left tackle. I think it is going to be a defensive end, which one it is.
You like Anza, yeah. I know that.
I love Ziggy Anza.
And Floyd is a tackle, I guess, by trade.
And defensive tackle. And you know what?
Deion Jordan is a hybrid end linebacker like you are. Yeah.
Anza's the same thing. I mean, they're both kind of in the same mold.
A little different, though. Anza's 275.
Anza's like 6'6".
Yeah. You know, and some of our conversations, I went and I watched some of the games that those guys played in. If I had to make a decision, boy, I really like Anza. And particularly because I think their performance is very similar. But, I mean, just think about the untapped potential of a guy who's relatively new to football.
Well, I just did a mock draft for the there's a UK, London deal. We're going to London next week, and we did a mock draft.
Yeah.
I ended up saying they're going to take Deion Jordan only because, I mean, I think the wild card would be Ziggy Ansah. I mean, most people have him pushed down later, you know, in the teen, not the early teens or late top 10. So I think it would be a little bit of a surprise if he went number two. With that said, if you're just putting it all aside, who I think is the player with the most upside, I think it's Anza. I mean, you look at what he has done.
I agree.
And with his ability and his physical gifting,
got,
I mean,
he's got a, an unbelievable gift of just athleticism.
Right.
Deion Jordan's got great speed. He's a little bit more polished. But, I mean, just as far as a gifted athlete, Anza, I think, has the advantage.
And I guess people by now know the story. He was going to play basketball, couldn't make the team at BYU, decided to go on the track team for a year, and then went over and actually talked the football coach into playing football. And they put him on in special teams, and then he put some weight on, and the rest is history. He's only started a handful of games. He hasn't been around the team too
long. Yeah, go watch the games he started.
Right.
Pretty good.
Dominant.
Pretty good.
Absolutely.
6'6", 275, ran a 4.6. I mean.
Now, the other guy that he asked about, Sharif Floyd.
Yes.
A very good football player, played, was one of the key factors of Florida having a good defense, and I watched a little bit of him last week too. And one of the games that I really watched was the Texas A&M game. And so, I mean, I'm kind of watching Sharif Floyd, and I'm watching Luke Joeckel. And Luke Joeckel, I thought some people say it wasn't his best game because one of the outside linebackers, number 34 for Florida, who's a draft prospect, beat him one time. But I think overall Joeckel played very well, and I kept looking for 73. And 73 never really jumped out. And I was kind of surprised at that. But, I mean, it was only one game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to grade a guy off of one game.
It is. And I don't know. I mean, listen, he's a very talented guy, Sharif Floyd. He was a guy who rose after the combine because of his workout and what he did and how impressive he was.
But have you heard any scuttlebutt on him lately? I mean, that's, you know.
No, I don't think he – I don't think he is one of the two. I don't think he goes number two. I think he's – you know, later in the top 10.
And here's the other thing. If it's a need-based draft, I mean, you signed a defensive tackle, you've got a relatively full roster of defensive tackles. I mean, is that really a need?
Yeah, because Roy Miller's here now. Derek Marks is here also.
Exactly. I don't see that.
Right. Let's go to the phone lines one more time before we head to break. 355-6351. That's 355-NFL1. We'll hear from Kerry in North Jersey wanting to talk about the draft. Kerry, good evening.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What's up?
Big fan in New Jersey. You know, it's kind of awkward, but
it's all right. What's on your mind tonight?
I was just had a question about this. I want actually an opinion from you guys. Do you have any two things? Who do you guys want to see us draft with number two? And also, are you guys on board with keeping Blaine Gabbert for another year? Like most people say, he's young. He's only 23. A lot of people saying Geno Smith at two. But I'm with the group of keeping Blaine for another year, you know, seeing what he can do. I think it's too early to give up on him. So I just wanted you guys' opinions on that.
All right. Thank you, Kerry. Now, I'll tell you what, we'll address the first part of your question, and then the second part of your question we'll get after the break because we've got some bites that will be associated with Blaine
Gabbert.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to that. Yeah, absolutely.
Who would I like to see him draft? The best player they can get. I mean, I don't
I'll be more specific.
Come on, Jeff.
I'll take
Anza. It's like when we used to practice with each other, soft. I mean, my goodness, that's embarrassing.
We had the old chest tap thing. We were both soft.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going this way. Anyways, I take Anza. I think in a
two Anzas. I heard two Anzas.
I take Ziggy Anza. I think he has the most upside. What I've seen on tape. Listen, I haven't watched all these guys, so in fairness, I mean, Dave Caldwell, his staff have watched all these guys, and they have a much more in-depth understanding of what they're looking at as far as who can go at that position. But I think the upside of Anza and what he could become is pretty special.
Just watching his athleticism, I mean, it's just so impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have teachers, in which, you know, these guys at this level are good coaches, I'd be excited to see what he could become along the lines of JPP.
We will answer the rest of Kerry's question about the quarterbacks when we come back from this timeout. 355-6351. That's 355-NFL1. We'll try to get some more calls before the end of Jaguars this week. Joe?
All right, JP. Season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. For more information, just call 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Check them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more. Get better.
Thank you, Joe. Back on Jaguars This Week, J.P. Shadrick filling in for Brian Sexton. Jeff Logman's here. Tony Buscelli here as well. We're in the middle. This is day two of the voluntary, quote-unquote, veteran mini camp just outside of Everbank Field. The camp will conclude tomorrow, another 2 hours and 20 minutes tomorrow. It is closed to the public, by the way, but media will be there. You'll hear through the media tomorrow. We had a chance today before practice to catch up with Jed Fish, the offensive coordinator. You know, we had a question right before the break from Kerry. I don't know, where was he, Jersey Shore?
Jersey.
Was he from South Jersey or something? Wanted to talk about quarterbacks and if Blaine Gabbert is going to be around. Is he the guy? I think the point is there's really not a guy right now, and here's what Jed Fish had to say about it earlier today.
Number one, you could see how they process information, and then number two, I think that you can we're not going to slow down right now. This is an opportunity for them to really take control and see who's going to prepare at a certain level and who's going to be ready to go out there and lead this team and lead the offense and really manage it. They both did a great job with that. And I appreciate what the fans want to hear right now, but I think that we've had one practice and we've had whatever amount of meetings, seven or something like that. We don't have that. We have two guys competing as hard as they possibly can to put themselves in position to be a starting quarterback. And I think that they need to have tunnel vision. I think they need to focus in on what they can control and not worry about really anything other than that.
So really it's quarterback 1A and 1B. There's no depth chart right now is the point.
No, and you wouldn't expect it. I mean, they want competition at all positions, whether it's perceived or whether it's real. You want competition, and I think that's what they're getting. They're both working extremely hard. You know, and I think they threw a lot at him in the first day of camp. I mean, they were running every single facet of an offense that they could run right out of the gate. You know, from the passing game, the running game, the two-minute drill. I mean, they were doing everything.
And I think you said something interesting there, Jeff, whether it's perception or real. I mean, let's be honest. Most of the time in the NFL when coaches come in and say it's open competition at every position, that is perception, because there are guys that you know
better than others.
And, well, and they're going to be the starter.
So let's just starters for 10 years in a row.
Let's just call it as it is. Right. This is a situation on this team because of what it's been through the last several years, the changeover, the purging of quite a bit of the roster coming into this minicamp, the philosophy of Gus Bradley that he built on through Pete Carroll at Seattle. Pete's a big competition guy coming from SC where he did it there. It's real. There's no perception that, you know, we're just going to say this because that's the right thing to say. There is open competition at, I'd say, just about every position that you have out there. We talked about the left tackle. If they draft a left tackle, I believe there will be an open competition for the left tackle position. I'm not saying Eugene Monroe won't win it, that he won't be the best guy. I think Eugene's a good player. But at the quarterback position, I think it is real that Blaine Gabbert and Chad Henne, and I would bet anything, add another name in there after the draft, will be coming in, and it will be an open competition, and the guy who can process information, as Jed Fish said, manage the team, understand, and make plays is going to be the quarterback. If that's Blaine Gabbert, then he'll earn it, and he'll take this team, and he'll have to perform week in and week out. If it's not, if it's Chad Henne, same thing for him, or if it's an unnamed rookie, that's what we're going to have this year. At the quarterback position, and the hope is that one of those guys, whoever it is, becomes the franchise quarterback, so you're not saying it's an open competition every year.
And I think they've been okay. I mean, it's about what you would expect for the quarterbacks in the first couple days of the first camp that they've ever had under a new staff, and there were some batted balls, and the head coach, Gus Bradley, addressed them today.
You know, I know some head coaches' philosophies is, you know, defense lineman, don't get your hands up. Those passes, you know, the offensive line would cut the defensive line and get their hands down. You know, I'm a little bit more of a defensive coach, so, you know, we have our hands up to teach that principle. But, you know, so those are things, you know, if you talk to our offense as well, they'd say, well, You know, those things don't worry about right now. We'll get those things taken care of. Their hands will be down. So it's more about just executing our fundamentals.
Tony, you'd never cut anybody like that, would you?
I would cut them. I just hit. Grab them, hit them, tackle them, make sure that if they put their hands up, then I'm going to dry block them and try to put them on their back.
And if somebody,
I mean, but that's what you're supposed to do. Now,
if somebody else in the media is going to make a big deal that these balls are getting batted in the minicamp, let me explain something to you. Me and Tony had the old brother-in-law deal because you have to, because it's a non-padded, controlled environment practice. And so when a defensive lineman comes off the ball, he's not ripping with his head down, his pad level flat, and trying to get something that he gets paid very well for. That's get sacks, because he doesn't want to injure a quarterback. So what do? They do the old tap dance. Me and Tony would be arm in arm. And then you know what I would do when the ball would get thrown? Because we're arm in arm, put your hands up. You know, hey, that happens in mini camp, and it's not a big deal. When they get the pads on, then the defensive linemen aren't going to be looking to bat balls. They're going to be looking to get sacked.
Does it hurt quarterback rhythm, though?
No, because, listen, most quarterbacks, you need to learn to throw through lanes and windows and everything else. And the reality is guys are going to get their hands up during the game, too. And it can be frustrating out there practicing when it happens. But the defensive linemen have to get in the habit of, if you can't get there, which, like Jeff said, it's tough to really get you might go full speed for three steps, but then at that point, after come with the ball, I mean, you can't finish the rush because you're going to hurt somebody, and you can't finish the block if you're the offensive lineman all the time because you have no pads on. It'll change once you have pads on. And so it is what it is. I think it's frustrating for an offense sometimes because you might not get the most realistic look, but it's good for the defense because they should get in the habit of getting their hands, because they're not going to get to the quarterback every time. If you play against a good offensive line and a good player, you might only get one or two shots at the quarterback. The rest of the time, you might get stymied. You're going to get pushed out of lanes and everything else. So get your hands up and bat down balls.
Hey, get used to it. J.J. Watts in the division.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, yeah, better get part used of it. To it. Tony, happy birthday. You might have to get some security to help you out with that pie.
Hey, friend. Appreciate it. Thanks, JP. Thanks, Mr. Logman. Yep. Tell your wife. Thanks for the pecan pie.
I'll pass it on.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for listening tonight to Jaguars This Week. They'll see you next week on Jaguars This Week. Thanks for listening.